Heard on this. All right. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for coming. Good evening. This is a mini series. Basically, every single source that we have could be a shiur unto itself. I'm going to do my best to condense everything into two shiurim. I like to have what I call projects, that every year I revisit a topic and try to look at it from a new angle, see something new and add onto it. So this is the, what I'm going to share with you over these next 2 weeks is kind of the product of about 2 years worth of me thinking about it, every Hanukkah and Purim. And Yirtzeh Hashem, every year I try to add a new layer, a new element to it. And so who knows, maybe in future times I'll be able to share a different perspective. But the concept of a Yom Tov is something that we take for granted. When you say the word holiday, it has certain connotations, sometimes holy, sometimes secular. And there are different parts of a Yom Tov, some that we connect with more, some that we don't connect with more, some that we associate more with the Yom Tov, some that we don't. But it's something that we take for granted. And it's important every once in a while to pause for a moment and try to examine what actually makes a Yom Tov a Yom Tov. And the perfect opportunity to do that is by looking at a non-Yom Tov, by looking at what's called a rabbinic holiday, a Yom Tov d'Rabbanan. So Pesach, Sukkot, Shavuos, Rosh Hashanah, and Yom Kippur, those are all mandated by the Torah. So Hashem sort of gave us a template for a Yom Tov. Throughout history, especially by Hanukkah and Purim, but as we'll see, there were many more instances as well, we created our own holidays. And in some ways, they share a lot in common with the biblical holidays. And in some ways, they're very different. And so over these next 2 weeks, I want to look at what makes them somewhat similar, what makes them a little bit different. And by doing that, we can kind of look at the atmosphere that Chazal wanted to create when they had a Yom Tov. And in addition to Chazal, there's also another very important player, which is the masses. As we'll see in this week, as well as next week, the masses' acceptance and understanding of the Yom Tov reflects itself in halacha as well. So this week, we'll primarily look at Purim. And next week, we'll look at Purim and Hanukkah. But this week will be primarily Purim. And to do that, we'll look at two main sources. We'll look at some Gemaras as well, but the two primary sources that we'll look at is Perek Tes of Megillas Esther, which basically talks about the initial creation of the holiday of Purim. And we'll also look at the Rambam's formulation of the, not creation of Purim, but of the concepts of the mitzvos of Purim. Before we start that, I want to ask you, now we're a little bit biased because we've lived through Jewish holidays, sometimes maybe too many of them, but if you had to pick what makes a Yom Tov, again, like if you had to make your own Yom Tov, not what you want, but what do you think is an important component of a Yom Tov that you would want to create? So a historical event, meaning it shouldn't just be a random holiday. Like in England, they have what's called like a bank holiday. So that's not like a real, that's not commemorating anything per se. It's just that everybody gets off, including the bankers. I'm sorry?
Labor Day, too.
Okay, so Labor Day. You know, you can argue that there's some historical thing, but yeah, for the most part, Labor Day is a day off. So you say that there has to be a historical impetus for it. And what about the observance itself? What would make the observance of a Yom Tov a Yom Tov?
Rituals. Special
reading,
special prayers, special ceremony, going to
worship. Okay, so
special sacrifices.
So rituals, maybe mitzvos, maybe karbanos, maybe davening, wine and meat. Okay, partying. So replicating or calling to mind something that we're commemorating, yeah?
Women don't have to do.
So without work, including in the kitchen, that's what you're saying. No work, including in the kitchen. All right. So that's Yom Kippur. Okay. So these are all different things. So now what I want to do is let's look at Perek Tes in Megillas Esther and see what the Jews did. And as we'll see, there's a lot of back and forth. So I want you to pay attention to the textual nuances of what the Jews did, what Mordechai and Esther did. And there's a lot of players here. And so that's another thing. As we're reading the Psukim, try to identify the key players that are important in creating the Yom Tov. Some of them are mentioned, some of them are not mentioned. So try to keep in mind who those players are. I'm going to share on Zoom so people can see there as well. Hold on here. Okay. So this is Perek Tes. We have the first two psukim, which basically talk about setting the stage for the Jewish fight. So on the 12th of Adar, and so in the 12th month of Adar, on the 13th day, that was the day that Haman had initially decreed that the Jewish people would be vulnerable to attack. So all the Jews get together. So what happens? So in Pasuk Aleph it says, "V'nafalchu." There was a complete reversal. So what exactly happened? In Pasuk Beis it says, Nikalu ha-Yehudim ba'arehem b'chol medinos ha-melech Achashverosh. So all of the Jews gathered together in their cities in all of the provinces of Achashverosh to essentially attack them. And they were successful. So now let's skip a bunch of psukim to Pasuk Tesvav. And now in Tesvav, so up until now we've been speaking about the Jews in the rest of the world. So what about the Jews in Shushan? So the same thing. Vayikhalu ha-Yehudim asher b'Shushan gam b'yom arba asar l'chodesh Adar. So there was also another gathering. So this kahal phrase is repeated. So the Jews in Shushan gathered again for another round of killing. What were the rest of the people doing? In Pasuk Tezayin, it says, Ushar ha-Yehudim asher b'medinas ha-melech Nikalu v'amod al nafsham v'noach me'oyvehem v'harog b'soneihem chamisha v'shivim elef uvabiza lo shalchu es yadam. So the rest of the Jewish people had gathered together and killed a bunch of people, and they didn't take any spoils. B'yom shloshasar lachodesh Adar, that was on the 13th day. V'noach barba asar, and they rested on the 14th. V'asa oso yom mishteh v'simcha. So this is what I would call phase one. In the Marvel Cinematic Universe, there's different phases of movies that lead up to different climaxes. This is phase one, the spontaneous holiday, right? Nobody's legislating anything right now. This is just, we won. This is a spontaneous expression. So what was their spontaneous expression? A yom of mishteh v'simcha. So what does mishteh v'simcha mean? What's the connotation there? Celebrate. So mishteh, right, it's a holiday. So mishteh is like eating, right? So we've been eating a lot of parties throughout Megillas Esther, so here's another one. And then simcha is a more of an emotional thing. So mishteh is a gashmias, a physical party. A lot of these ideas from the psukim I took from Professor Rabbi Yoni Grossman's book on Esther. So he's, a lot of the ideas that he has here, he collects from different mepharshim, but he just organizes it extremely, extremely well. And he makes a very interesting observation. I think this is his own, that all the other times there are parties, he says there's no mention of simcha. It's only when the Jewish people celebrate in the proper fashion that the Megillah uses the term simcha. Because simcha is a more of a spiritual feeling as opposed to a carnal, hedonistic, biophysical reaction. But anyway, so the Jewish people had a day of mishteh and simcha. Okay, so that was the rest of the world. What about in Shushan? So in Pasuk Yud Ches, Vayehudim asher b'Shushan nikolu b'shlosha sarbo ubarba sarbo. So they gathered for 2 days. V'noach b'chamisha asar. So once again, they did the exact same thing just a day later. Okay, so that's phase one. That's the spontaneous. No mention of what? No mention of a bunch of things, but what are some? I'm sorry? Right, so there's no mention of any institutionalization yet. There's also a couple other omissions. Right, so there's no other activities. It's just Mishteh v'Simcha. Yeah, Mark?
In the Chumash has cessation of avoda.
Yeah, so there's no Isser Malacha. There's no forbidden labor, but I would go even further. It's not called a Yom Tov. It's called a Yom Mishteh v'Simcha. It's not called anything. It's just, it's not like they scheduled anything. It's just like, let's party today. So it's not called, it's not even called the Yom Tov, let alone there being an Isser Malacha. But then let's go even further. There are certain players that are not mentioned here. Mordechai, Esther, any of the Jewish or secular leadership. This is a grassroots movement of just people feeling a certain way and just doing it.
They don't mention God either.
I'm sorry?
They don't mention God either.
Right, there's no mention of Hashem anywhere in the Megillah, and especially here. So, you know, you could argue that maybe it's not a religious thing. I don't know, because then you'd have to have a referendum on the entire book of Esther. So I think that there is some religious element, particularly because of the word simcha, as Professor Grossman pointed out. But yeah, God is not mentioned. There's no mention of any Jewish leadership. It's purely, and even the language of nikhalu, there's no even uniting. It's just, it seems like everybody had the same idea. It's just, this was just an instinctive reaction of the Jewish conglomerate to rejoice after being victorious. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not doing it because they want to get something. They're doing it because it's a grassroots way of their getting their freedom or
avoiding
whatever
was coming. Exactly right. So the Megillah also stresses that they didn't extend their hand to take from any of the loot or the booty, and to highlight that this was purely an act of self-defense and there was a certain emotional catharsis afterwards. So that's phase one. Now let's go to Pasuk Yud Tes. Al Kain, therefore, HaYehudim HaPrazim, HaYoshvim Be'arei HaPrazos. So this is a very interesting language. Paruz means open. So the Jews that lived in the open cities. So they lived in unwalled cities. And it uses a double language. HaYehudim HaPrazim HaYoshvim Ba'arei HaPrazos. So the unwalled city Jews that live in unwalled cities. Why the double language? So it's not really a double language. One is a noun. One is defining the place and one is defining the Jews. So there are unwalled cities and there are unwalled city Jews. Why do you think the Megillah is stressing not only that there are Jews living in unwalled cities, but there are actually unwalled city Jews? That's like saying that there aren't Jews in the Bronx and in Brooklyn. There are Brooklyn Jews and Bronx Jews. So it sounds like that there's a certain, I'm sorry. So that's interesting. I would actually argue the opposite. I would say the other way, that what the Megillah is highlighting, yes, in a certain way, everybody's coming together, but there are different identities at work over here that are important in the creation of the holiday. That
are they saying that because Jews that were Jews from the unwalled cities?
Ah, okay, yes. So you're getting into Gemara right now. I didn't want to go into the Gemara yet. There's a lot. Every single pasuk here is darshanable for many halachos. So yeah, so you can get into. There's a very interesting. You can have a whole nother shiur about this. About either Yishai Leibovitz. Some say it was Yishai Leibovitz. Some say it was Ernst. Who was the guy that was associated with the Mefarti movement? Ernst Simon, who didn't want to keep Purim at all because he felt that it was it didn't reflect well on Jewish morality. So he would live in Yerushalayim on Purim and in Tel Aviv on Shushan Purim. So we wouldn't have to keep Purim at all. So the Gemara goes into a whole sugya about where do you define your identity? But even, and they try to darshan it from Sukkim and from Svaros. But before we get to that, what I think the Megillah is trying to tell us is that geographic identities were very important in coming up with this spontaneous expression, as well as the kvias, the subsequent establishment of a Yom Tov. And that comes to the forefront because why? Because there are different days. As we'll see, there are different days here. So people felt vulnerable on different days. The Ramban, just one second, the Ramban at the beginning of Maseches Megillah, I didn't put it here just because we don't have time, but the Ramban has a very interesting, and many people disagree with it. The Ramban in the beginning of Maseches Megillah has a whole theory about how the Yom Tov evolved. I think many Parshanim and many Halakhic Rishonim disagree with his analysis. But he said that the people that lived in unwalled cities felt more vulnerable. So they were the ones that established this holiday first. They were the ones that said, we were the most vulnerable. We should be the ones that are koveya, what the main Purim is. As we'll see, maybe that's not true. But that's what the Ramban argues, the position of these Yehudim HaPrazim were. Yes, Victor.
The fact that you have in the world, and how, if in a walled city, you have a different attitude towards everything. Outside, you have a different. So, hence, it's a way of saying, in this case, that you're going to have two celebrations. You're going to have a freer celebration first, and then inside, we're going to have a more formal celebration.
So, yeah, you're saying that. Because people have different cultures and different, associations and perceptions, so there's going to be different Yomim Tovim. Now, that's a very novel concept, right? We take it for granted that there's Purim and Shushan Purim. Whoever heard of having two different Yomim Tovim, right? Everybody celebrates the same Pesach. Everybody celebrates the same Shavuos, the same Sukkot.
And even the 2 days, Yom Tov versus 1 day Yom Tov. Israel is still the same base.
Exactly, right. Yeah, we have a Sveka de Yoma, we have an extra day of Yom Tov, but that's a logistical, pragmatic thing. So the concept of having different Yomim Tovim for different people is a really novel concept, and let's see how that plays out. But before we get to that, let's just finish Pasuk Yud Tes. So they get together, Osim es Yom Arba'as or Lachodesh Adar, Simcha Umishte. So rejoicing and party. So the order is flipped. The Yom Tov. Now we call it a Yom Tov. And we add another thing. Umishloach manos ish l're'ehu. So now we add a host of things. So the spontaneous reaction wasn't a Yom Tov. It was just a rejoicing day where we party and we feel good. Now we're calling it a Yom Tov. We're calling it a holiday. The Jewish people in the unwalled cities want to make this a holiday. So when they think holiday, right, this is the first time we're having a holiday that we're making up. This is the first post-biblical or, post-Torah holiday. So what do they associate with a holiday? First of all, Mishta and Simcha is reversed. The main thing is not the Mishta. The main thing is the Simcha. We have a term, Simchas Yom Tov. Simchas Yom Tov means different things to different people. For some people, it's good food and good wine. For some people, it's new clothing. But it's not or off from work. But there's different connotations of Simchas Yom Tov, but they're all under this rubric of a more abstract spiritual simcha. We're not eating for the sake of eating. We're eating and drinking and wearing nice clothing so that we will feel happy. The eating and drinking is not an end unto itself. So we reverse it. And now because it's a Yom Tov, there's also another thing. U'mishloach manos ish l're'ehu. So why would we add that? We would add that because, why would I add mishloach manos now that it's a Yom Tov? Right, so that everybody else can participate. And in fact, there are some academic scholars who say that this concept of mishloach manos was actually a Persian custom for secular holidays. And so we only start hearing about mishloach manos and matanas levionim by Megillas Esther and then Ezra and Nehemiah. So they say, obviously, the concept of tzedakah always existed and the concept of being nice to people always existed. But the institutionalization of it only came after the Persian exile and as part of the Yom Tov identity. Yes, Alon. Yeah.
What I'm thinking about here is that Mordechai, it's not actually the silence, it's a condition that comes from what happened.
Okay.
And so I think that what Mordechai was saying in this case was the spontaneity. Spontaneity was there, right? So what you would expect is to say that you don't see a simple image.
Mm-hmm.
It was in that time it was contained. When you're creating a holiday, right? Holiday, it's easier to do the mish there. Hopefully the simple will come.
Right.
I think what Mordechai was saying is specifically the question is to say, like, look, they had parties and they were happy. While for you guys in the future, you guys should focus on the simcha and your mishteh and your mishteh will come rather than what's natural to you, that the mishteh would be
So I agree with you with everything you said except for the Mordechai part, meaning Mordechai's not here. Mordechai's not involved yet in pasuk. Yeah, but as we'll see, the next pasuk is when Mordechai comes in. Mm-hmm. So when Mordechai's writing pasuk Yates, or Mordechai and Esther are writing pasuk Yates, they're writing still about the grassroots movement. Now, the grassroots movement doesn't just want a spontaneous holiday. They want to establish a holiday. So now, let's go to Pasuk Chaf. Now, we see Mordechai come in. So in Pasuk Chaf, Vayichtov Mordechai es hadvarim ha'ele, Mordechai writes this stuff down, whatever this stuff is, different explanations. Vayishlach svarim el kol ha'yehudim, and so he sends it to everybody. What do we want? Pasuk Chaf Aleph lekayem aleihem, to give a sense of formality to it. Lios osim es yom arba asar lachodesh adar. The es yom hachamisha asar bal b'chol shana v'shana. So first of all, now, when Mordechai comes, the embodiment of the Jewish establishment, he adds first, and he wants to standardize it. So we have the grassroots, and now we want the leadership approval. Mordechai changes something right off the bat. What does he change? Now he wants a two-day Yom Tov. Now, when we usually assume a two-day Yom Tov, this is a machlokas in the Mefarshim, what it means. But nowadays, we keep one day and other people keep another day, whether you're a 14th of Adar or a 15th of Adar. The most simple reading of the Pasuk is that Mordechai wants everybody to keep a two-day holiday. So Mordechai is, on the one hand, validating that there are different experiences. But at the same time, he's saying everybody's got to do the same thing. Another way you can look at it is as if Mordechai is saying, no, there's only one holiday and we're only focusing on one identity. And that's the Shushan, right? Because Shushan fought on both days. So you could look at it one way as saying Mordechai saying, no, everybody will just, you know, share their experiences together. The other way of looking at it is that saying, no, Shushan is the Koveya. Shushan, the center of, you know, Jewish political life or Jewish cultural life or Jewish religious life. It's hard to know, but Shushan, Mordechai is saying, is the main thing. Those are two different ways you could read it. I'm just being fair, meaning Mordechai. I hear what you're saying. Meaning you're saying that Shushan didn't actually rest for two days. Shushan, okay, yeah, you could, yeah, no, I hear what you're saying. You know, Alon, you're right. You're right.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay. So let's stick with the first, let's stick with the first chat. Yeah, I think you're right. Okay. So Mordechai is essentially saying everybody's perspective, everybody's experience is valid, but we got to keep it standardized. Now let's look in Pasuk Chaf Beis to see what else he keeps. So he says, "Kayama Masher Nachu Behem Yis Hayehudim Me'ay Vehem," to commemorate the days that they rested. "Ve'achodesh Asher Napach Lahem Miyagam LeSimcha U'Me'evel LiYom Tov." And now there's a new term. hachodesh asher nepach, not just days. Now we have a whole month that flips. In fact, the Yerushalmi, which I didn't include on the source sheet, the Yerushalmi says that from this pasuk or from this term, we actually see that you could read the Megillah the entire month of Adar. That's what the Yerushalmi says, which is very interesting. But probably the most simple interpretation of Hachodesh is because one of the lots that that Haman threw was for the month. Las ume evel liyom tov, and a day of mourning, miyagon lesimcho me evel liyom tov, las ososam, yimei mishte v'simcha u'mishloach manos ish l're'ehu u'matanos le'evyonim. So now, Mordechai makes some more changes. What does he change? There's two changes from the grassroots attempts to institutionalize. So it's becoming more inclusive by the matanos le'evyonim, meaning it's not just gifts to your friends. Now what we're stressing the aniyim. Yeah, there's also one omission here. He takes something out. No, Simcha's there.
Switched the order.
Right, so that's another change. He switches the order back to Mishta v'Simcha, which is something very interesting. Why do you think he would switch the order back? There's something that's missing. Yom Tov, he takes out the word Yom Tov. Now that there's no longer a Yom Tov, now the order of Mishta v'Simcha flips. So the Gemara actually says that initially when the Jewish people wanted to set up this Yom Tov, they held it as a Yom Tov that it was Asur b'malacha, that they weren't allowed to do work. But then when the final iteration of establishing it came, they took out the Yom Tov status. So it's actually, when I said the creation of a holiday, it's actually a little bit of a misnomer. Purim is not a Yom Tov in the classical sense. A Yom Tov is a day where work is forbidden. And Purim, the Gemara says you shouldn't do work if you don't have to, but it's not forbidden. And because of that, the Simcha Mishta order flips around because there's no Simchas Yom Tov anymore. It's just a day of rejoicing. So that's something else that's interesting. Now the Gemara frames it as the Jewish people weren't Makabel, the Yom Tov element. The most simple interpretation of the Psukim is that Mordechai is the one that's asserting this. Now, it could just be that Mordechai knew what would stick. You know, Mordechai is essentially tapping into what the Jewish people are interested in, because we don't know how much of a gap there was between this grassroots attempt at institutionalization and Mordechai's response. But whatever the catalyst is, it has now ceased to be a Yom Tov in the biblical sense. So this is the first time that the Jewish people are creating a post-Torah holiday. There seems to be this back and forth as to how similar should it be to a Torah holiday. And right now, Mordechai is saying standardization, but we're taking away the Isser Malacha. We're taking away what's probably the most defining element of a Yom Tov or characteristic of a Yom Tov that we normally associate it with, and he just throws it out the window. And what's the Jewish people's response? V'kibel ha-Yehudim. The Jewish people accept it. So then it goes on. It's sort of like a false ending because then it goes back to Haman Ha'agagi and it sums up the Purim story again. So let's go to Pasuk Chavav, the Alkain, Karu La Yamim Ha'ele, Yamim. So we're still 2 days. So we call that Purim. So now, V'Hayamim Ha'ele, so down to, so let's do Pasuk Chav Zayin. Kimu V'Kiblu Ha'Yehudim Aleihem V'Al Zaram. So once again, still the 2 day thing that the Jewish people accepted it. So not only was there a rabbinic or leadership push, the masses accepted it to do it as is written, right? So it's based on a letter, which is also something that's very interesting, right? The Megillah, who points this out? Rav David Cohen from Flatbush, he points out that the Megillah is the only example of a post-Torah work that we darshan halachos from. Hilchos Purim, the halachos of Purim are darshaned, are interpreted and derived using hermeneutical principles from the text of a post-Torah source. We don't do that anywhere else in Nach. So this was again something new. We're trying to create a new holiday. Let's do it out of a book. Let's do it out of writing, and then we'll extract halachos from there. So that's what we're doing. Kichsavam, as is written, v'chizmanam, in their proper times. So again, in their proper times means both days. And the Gemara actually darshans from zmanehem, zmanam, all of these different terms, that there are multiple days that one is allowed to read Megillah. The Gemara asks, how do I know you could read it on the 14th, on the 15th? And the Mishnah actually says, in certain cases, I can read it even earlier, on the 13th, the 12th, and the 11th. So the Gemara interprets that from different phraseologies of zman, of time. So the fact that it uses the word zman to give us multiple options of reading the Megillah, the implication is that there's some standardization, that even though I might halacha lemaisa nowadays be keeping Shushan Purim, I'm still connected to Shushan Purim, right? We don't say tachanun on Shushan Purim. You're not allowed to fast on Shushan Purim, even if you don't live in Yerushalayim or a walled city.
My clients, but sometimes their lifestyle can run their immune system to a natural disaster, and I don't want to get blown away.
Just a reminder, if you have a comment, please feel free to use the chat function or to unmute. But otherwise, if people could remain muted, that would be helpful just in terms of filtering out the background noise. So the final pasuk that we have in this stage, I would say, is Vahayamim Ho'ele Nizkarim V'Na'asim. These days were remembered and done. So what does that mean? Remembered and done. So how do you remember a day, and how do you do a day? I'm sorry? So, okay, so you say that Nizkarim and Nasim means to establish and to do it. Okay, any other? Okay, so now, so you're saying that it actually is referring to Tainus Esther. So that's very interesting. Divrei Hatzomos V'Zakasam is something that we'll see in a different pasuk. So yes, I think Rav Soloveitchik spoke about that's an allusion to Ta'anis Esther. The interesting thing is that Ta'anis Esther hadn't been established at that point. It was actually during the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, Ta'anis Esther was actually a Yom Tov that you were not allowed to fast on. So it's very interesting how it evolved. And yet the Rav still believed this was an allusion to Ta'anis Esther. Again, a shir for another time. B'chol... Okay. Right. So you're saying that there's an element of ritualized zechira, of ritualized remembrance. So the Gemara says that Nizkarim is a reference to Mikra Megillah, and Naasim are the mitzvahs hayom. If I didn't have the Gemara, what's the easiest interpretation? I just remember it. Right? When you're sitting down, when you have your Sudas Purim, when you do your Mishnah V'Simcha, when you do your Matanos Lev Yonim, when you do your Mishloach Manos, you talk about what happened. The Gemara says, how do I do Zechira? Now I read the Megillah. But back then, there's no Mikra Megillah. There's no one thing which I also wanted to point out, and that's where the Septuagint comes in as well. At the end of this year, there's no mention of Mikra Megillah anywhere. There's no mention of Mikra Megillah anywhere in Megillas Esther. Even in the post, like the postscript or the epilogue, there's no mention of Mikra Megillah. The only thing we mention are remembering and partying and doing tzedakah. No Mikra Megillah, which that'll be the topic for next week. There's one more stage. Now we have a new player that comes onto the scene. Pasuk Chavtes. Vatichtov Esther Hamalka. So Esther the queen. So the political authority. Bas Avichai U Mordechai HaYehudi and Mordechai the Jew. So we have government and ethnic cultural forces working together, Eskol HaTokef, to write down all of the way they translate it, the acts of power, what had happened, L'kayem Es Igeres HaPurim Hazos HaShenis. Now there's a second letter that gets sent out. I don't know exactly when this happened. Megillah doesn't say. But for some reason, they needed to send out a second letter. Why? Why would you need to send out a second letter? Okay, so you're being a little bit more generous than I would. When you get a second notice for a bill, what's the reason? First one didn't. First one didn't work. So Igeres Hashenis, again, you can be more charitable, you can be more cynical, whatever it means, the first one wasn't enough. It could be that they felt it needed more chizik, or it could be that they encountered opposition. I don't know. But for some reason, letter one was not enough. So much so that we had to bring in a new player. We had to bring out the big gun, so to speak, of Esther and not just Mordechai. Vayishlach Svarim El Kol HaYehudim El Sheva Ve'eser Mameo Medino Malchus Achashverosh Divrei Shalom Ve'emes. This is a new term. Shalom and Emes. What is... So I need a government letter written by the queen and the head of the Jews, or king of the Jews or whatever, to write Shalom and Emes. So again, the implication of why do I need to send out Shalom and Emes? Because there wasn't Shalom and Emes before that point, exactly. There was some friction. Friction between who? Megillah doesn't say. These are unnamed parties. But for some reason, in order to have Shalom and Emes, we needed to bring out another player to send out another letter, basically restating the first thing. So what did the second letter say? L'kayim es yimei ha-purim ha'ele bizmanehem, in their times. Zmanehem is plural, meaning times. Now there's a division. Now there's a division between Purim and Shushan Purim. There's no es yom arba asar ves yom hachamisha asar. Now we have differentiation. Bizmanehem ka'asher kiyem alehem Mordechai Yehudi ve'ester hamalka, just like Mordechai and Esther told them to do. V'ka'asher kaimu al nafsham divrei hatzomos v'zakasam. Just like the Jewish people accepted everything before that, they got to accept this as well. And it concludes, umamar Esther kiyem divrei purim ha'ela v'nichtav ba'sefer. It worked out, and now we wrote it in a book, Megillas Esther. So we now have a final version that for some reason, the Jewish people really didn't, there was some sticking point. And the finality was essentially accepting everything except for Zmanehem. Now we have differentiated perspectives. We have 14 and 15, two different holidays, but this is where the Gemara darshins that you can read the Megillah on the 14th or the 15th. So there's a certain amount of overlap that the Megillah can be read on different days. But on the other hand, l'chadchila, ideally, the Megillah's got to be read at very particular times. Purim has to be observed at very particular times. Yeah, so we'll recap in a second alone, yeah. Okay. So yeah, we'll get to the Yerushalmi does this more justice, but the Bavli also talks about this, that the Gemara understands that one of the unnamed parties is Beis Din. That the Beis Din was scared of anti-Semitic and theological implications of having a Megillah and having a Yom Tov. We'll get to that. But they're not mentioned at all here. So if we want to keep Pashat Pshat, it's the people. Now, the people had this spontaneous happy reaction. So to say that they would be now all of a sudden very scared, that's a very big shift. So the Gemara deals with that by saying, oh, there's just another party here that's just not mentioned. And that's who Esther is essentially trying to assuage or cajole or something like that. So it's 8:45 already. We'll try to get to the Gemara. But if we want to keep it at the simple level, it's the Jewish populace and the populist movement that's opposing Mordechai needing Esther to come in and basically lay down the law. So what would be their sticking point? Yeah, Mark.
This is an observation. It's hard to imagine any period of Jews, especially today, but back then, of the Jews just all of a sudden wanting to take a new thing on. And we're sort of reluctant to change for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not so surprising to me that people, they might not be secular, they might be very religious and still sort of reluctant. You mentioned nowadays the amazing miracle happened, and then
some people came out and said we're involved with the miracle. So, okay, we're going to get time out of it. The prediction is not a question. It's number one. But I think observation is it's kind of interesting and ironic and maybe kind of funny that even from day one of this holiday, there's a lot of focus.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. People can't agree. And the pushback seems to be, what's the one thing that changes? Meaning, what does the establishment have to concede in order to get everybody to be happy? It's the division of the days. It's Manehem. So the sticking point seems to be that the Jewish people wanted to have individual celebrations based on, am I a walled city Jew? Am I a Shushan Jew? Am I an unwalled city Jew? So how do you explain that? So one explanation that I think is a more academic one, one academic one says, no, you're barking up the wrong tree. It was like what you were saying, Mark. It was that there was a certain conservatism of trying to make a new holiday, that it's really, you know, you're changing the Torah, basically. And in fact, the Gemara in the Yerushalmi says, you can't just make up new stuff. It doesn't work like that. The Torah actually says, Nevi'im, prophets and prophetesses can't come up with new stuff. It doesn't work like that. And so, yeah, okay, I can have my own private little celebration, but to have a standardized national holiday across the board, 14th and 15th for everybody, that's a new holiday. You're adding on to the Torah. You can't do that. And so, in fact, the Chassam Sofer, in one of his tshuvas, he talks about how can we have all these mini Purims, like throughout history, there's Purim Krakow, Purim Baghdad. And whenever the Jews in a particular city were threatened with extinction and through some either miraculous or hidden miraculous way they survived, they would make a Purim. So the Chassam Sofer says, how can I make up new holidays? And he says, the reason why is because it's not a national thing. It's just a private, you know, individual or community. There's no problem with that. The problem is coming up with an entire new national holiday. That's where some of the opposition for Yom Ha'atzma'ut and Yom Yerushalayim come up. And how we deal with that is, again, a shir for another time. When this Chassam Sofer also comes up with that as well. But yeah, so that's one explanation for the Jewish people's sticking point. And that's why Mordechai sort of conceded in a certain way of saying, okay, we'll keep both days, but everybody can keep their own day. The other explanation that I've seen, and this is from Rav Yoel ben Nun, it's Rebbe, I think, in Gush and in Mechalat Herzog. So he says you have to think about historically, both what we know from classical history as well as from Tanakh, where actually was the center of Jewish life. So you could say that it's Shushan. There's another center of Jewish life where Yerushalayim. So the Gemara has a lot of discussions as to when Purim took place within, you know, the Persian dynasty. You know, the Gemara has a whole discussion about it. Academics have a whole discussion about it. But the way, at least many classical understandings, there was a Jewish settlement that had moved up to Yerushalayim, had started rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash, and the Persian kings had essentially stopped it. They had put a hold, they had frozen the government permission to build up the city. And the people that had gone up initially were sort of the lower class, either, you know, religious, socially, economically, but they had begun to build up Yerushalayim. So Rav Yoel ben Nun says that this was actually an opposition, not of conservative versus, you know, religious progressives, if you will. This was a fight between Yerushalayim and Shushan. And that's why the cutoff point for having being in a walled city is not Achashverosh is time. It's actually Yoshua ben Nun, the resettlement of Yerushalayim, of Eretz Yisrael, rather. So that's what Rav Yoel ben Nun says. Another way you can take it is similar to that, but essentially saying that everybody wanted their own, people wanted to immortalize and memorialize their experiences. Shushan is different than me. You know, if I lived in an unwalled city, I didn't do anything that I'm not commemorating anything that Shushan did. And Shushan could say the same thing. And so Mordechai said, okay, we're going to keep this as a hybrid model. We're going to say that you keep your own day, but the Megillah has some fluidity to it. You can't actually fast or give a hesped on the other day. So Mordechai compromises and saying, okay, everybody has their own unique perspective, but there's actually a little bit of leeway. There's actually a little bit of leeway to enforce a certain standardization. So that's also another model of a Yom Tov. This is a new model. We're taking away the Kedusha aspect of the Yom Tov. And instead, we're saying everybody has their own individual simcha. But at the same time, not only do you have to think about other people to give Mishloach Manos and Matanas Levyonim, you actually have to think about all those kihilos, nikalu ayuhudim, of all the other kihilos, and that you see yourself as being a little bit part of it. That's sort of the compromise that that Mordechai reached. Yeah, Mark. So you're arguing that the Yom Tov element was dropped when they kind of broke up the day. I would argue that it was actually broken up a little bit earlier, even during Mordechai's initial push, because that's when the Yom Tov term is taken out. But yeah, you could say that that was kind of the final, you know, the final stamp on it by basically saying that if everybody's celebrating different days, you can't actually have it as a biblical or a Torah holiday. Okay, so that's the end of source number one. That's the end of Esther Perek Tess. So I did mention that there was one unnamed player, and that was Basedin. So Basedin is going to say, according to the Gemara, like what Mark said, that there was a certain religious conservatism. But just because we're a little bit short on time, I want to just raise another point, which I alluded to, which is there's something here that's missing that we all do. Mikra Megillah. It doesn't mention Megillah anywhere, even in the postscript, right? So, Vatichtov Esther. And then it says, L'kayim es yimei ha-purim. Right? So Esther, even according to the Gemara, Esther wants to legislate Mikra Megillah. Esther wants to say, let's read Mikra Megillah. If you just quickly turn to page... to page four. I'm sorry, to page five, source number four. Source number four. So this is Gemara from Maseches Megillah. Amar Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda shalcha lahem Esther lechachamim. So Esther sent to the chachamim, kavuni ledoros, establish me for all generations. And then they responded, it's going to be a catalyst for anti-Semitism. I'm already written about in their history books, so it's not going to be, there's not going to be an issue. So what does Kavuni Ladoros mean? What does establish me for all generations mean? The next question is Kasvuni Ladoros. The next question in the Gemara is Esther wants the Megillah to be written down. So what would I say is Kavuni Lidoros? What does it mean to establish me? Yeah, the simplest explanation you would be is to establish me as a holiday. So turn the next page. This is a one-line explanation by one of the Rishonim. His name is Rabbi Avram in Nahar, Rabbi Avram from Montpellier in the Provence region of France. Just as a quick rule. So he was a Talmud of Rashi's Beis Medrash, not Rashi himself, one of the Bali Tosfos. He generally, though, interprets Rashi. If you ever want to know what Pshat in Rashi is, look at Rabbi Avraham Minahar. He's not on many Masechtas, but if he's there, look. So in the parentheses is what Rashi has, and Rabbi Avraham Minahar takes out. The rest of it is what Rashi says as well. So Rashi says, Liyom Tov, Likriya, V'lios li l'shem. So Rashi says what Esther wanted was a holiday, Mikra Megillah, and essentially memorializing me, Esther, through that. So it's called Megillas Esther. Rabbi Avraham Minahar takes out the word Yom Tov, probably because what he thinks Rashi meant was the Yom Tov, the institutionalization of reading Megillah. meaning why do I read a Megillah? Because it's a holiday. The pushback of the Chachamim was not on the holiday per se, but it was on creating a text and reading it and spreading it. The actual party itself, oh, that's not such a big deal, right? Because it's just a party, right? Jews have parties all the time. The Goyim are not going to get upset because we're having a party. Once you start reading why we're having a party, that's problematic. So the Gemara says that the main opposition was Mikra Megillah. But the Megillah doesn't talk about Mikra Megillah anywhere. And what's more is if you look in source number 7, this is from the Septuagint. So in the Septuagint version of Megillah's Esther, there's a lot of interesting stuff. At the end, there's actually a postscript that was not actually part of the Megillah that the translators added in. It's very clearly an addition that they made. So first is part of the Apocrypha. So Mordechai said, God has done all these things. So God remembered his people. Therefore, these days shall be given to them in the month of Adar, the 14th and the 15th of the same month, with assembly and joy and with gladness before God. So here Hashem is mentioned, right? So in the Apocrypha, we see Hashem's name. In our text, no mention of Hashem. There's no, and with gladness before Hashem. What's the translation of that in Hebrew? Usumachtem lifnei Hashem. What does that remind you of? Going to the Beis Hamikdash, Sukkos. We take that out. There's no, this here from this, the imagery that the Septuagint is trying to convey is, oh, this is a real yontif. What does our Megillah do? Takes out all mention of it. So it's not a yontif. So then here comes the postscript. In the fourth year of the reign of Ptolemy and Cleopatra, Dosthenes, apparently, I don't know what that is, who said he was a priest and a Levi, interesting, and Ptolemy's his son, brought this letter of Purim, which they said was the same, and which Lysimachus, the son of Ptolemy, who was in Jerusalem, had translated. So this is hundreds of years after Purim. This is hundreds of years after the Purim story. We don't know exactly which Ptolemy and which Cleopatra it was. This is hundreds of years later. So what do we see here? Again, no mention of Mikra Megillah. Now, again, it could be that they read it, but what is the text of Esther trying to convey? Partying, rejoicing, according to the Septuagint, religious holiday. No Mikra Megillah. And in fact, if you look in source number 8, this is an excerpt from a Gaonic work called the Siddur of Rav Amram Gaon. We have this in the original text, and some Rishonim had this as well. And with this, we'll close. V'hamevakesh, let's say sladerech, somebody who wants to go on a trip. V'hamevakesh l'kros ha-megillah be'achadasar, b'shneimasar, b'shloshasar. Can you read it on the 11th, the 12th, the 13th? Which is what the Chachamim instituted, that people that lived in small villages, if you supplied water to the main cities, they had a special dispensation. This guy's not doing that. This guy's going on a cruise. Is he able, or he's going on a caravan somewhere? Can he do it? Im yachal likach imo megillah, so if you could take a megillah, you should do that. Dishadru min mesifta. So the way the Gaonim worked was that they had a central yeshiva and they would send out answers. So a psak came out from the centralized Gaonic yeshiva. Kol takana sheyachol kidei sheyikra so bismana yaseh. You should do whatever possible to read it in its proper time. V'im ein yachol, but if you're not able to, korei, o ba'achadasar, o biyud beis, o biyud gimel. You could read it on any of those days, essentially saying that you don't even have to read the Megillah on Purim. This is really interesting. Ideally, you should read the Megillah on Purim. But I don't even need to. That's something that's really interesting here. So we see in the creation of this holiday, we have rejoicing, Mishta and Simcha, Matan es Lev Yonim, Mishloach Manos, no mention of Mikra Megillah. We know that it's a mitzvah, but there's no mention of it explicitly in the Megillah. And according to Rav Amram Gaon, if you're in a pinch, you don't even need to read it on Purim. So it seems like that the mitzvah of Megillah is completely separate from the mitzvos of Purim. Like, so what is the essence of Purim? I would say Megillah. But to them, it's Shalach Manas, it's Matanas Lev Yonim, it's your Purim Suda. Mikra Megillah is important, don't get me wrong. But you want to know what defines the holiday? Not that. And in fact, just to prove this, I said we would do the Rambam. So I just have to show you one Rambam. I'm sorry. If you go to page 4, Halacha Yudalid. So the Rambam has 2 prakim about Mikra Megillah. In fact, when he says there are 2 mitzvahs derabanan in Hilchos Megillah and Hilchos Chanukah, he doesn't call it Hilchos Purim, first of all. He also says that there are 2 mitzvos. One is presumably menorah, and the other presumably is Megillah. He doesn't seem to count Mishloach Manos, Matanos Lev Yonim, and the Suda. But then he says in Halacha Yedalid, mitzvahs Yom Arba Asar, the mitzvah of the 14th day, Livnei Kfarim Va'ayaros V'yom Chamisha Asar Livnei Krachim, and the 15th for the people that lived in the walled city, Liyos Yom Simcha Umishta Umishmolach Manos L'Reyem Umatanas L'Evyonim Umutar Basias Melacha. You want to know what the mitzvos of Purim are? Basically everything except Megillah. Megillah is its own thing. So what I want to talk about with you next week is, why is Megillah its own thing? And as we'll see, Hadlakas Neiros Chanukah is also in its own thing. Because according to many Rabbanim and academics, they didn't actually like menorah the first few years. So Mitzvah Shem, we'll get to that next week. What do Megillah and Chanukah have in common? Thank you both very much. Thank you all very much and have a great night.
Thank you.
So to be clear, I think they started doing it right away or relatively early on, but it's not mentioned because that's not a din in the Yom Tov. That's something else. We'll get that. What I want to do is, well, what is that something else? I know that's what I want to point out.